Technorama interview with Anthony Mann.
Good morning, folks. This is your captain speaking.
Technorama.
Remember when?
Technorama.
On this day in tech history.
Tech.
And now, the news.
Tech.
What the chuck?
Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Pardon me, where do you keep your wooden stakes and garlic?
Over there, in the media corner.
Technorama.
Hold my beer and watch this.
Unfasten your seatbelts and disregard all safety rules. Here your flight crew, Chuck and Craig.
Welcome to Technorama, the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time listening to Technorama, thank you for joining us. If you're a returning listener, welcome back. We appreciate you giving us your time. I'm Chuck Tomasi, and with me as always is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I'm doing great. And by the way, I like my steaks medium rare.
Not those kind of steaks.
Oh.
Wooden steaks.
Yeah, those aren't very chewy.
Your wooden head.
Or tasty.
This time, we're proud to announce we have an independent filmmaker, Anthony D.P. Mann, to talk to us about his new film, The Terror of Dracula.
Say it again, with more feeling.
The Terror of Dracula!
You fool. I was talking about in a Transylvanian accent.
The Terror of Dracula.
There you go. Thank you.
Well, Anthony, we don't talk to too many people in the film industry. Welcome to the show, and it's a pleasure to talk to you today.
Well, you know what? It's an absolute pleasure to be on the program as well. So happy to get out and share as much information as possible to try and to inform people that they have to come out and check out this film that we've done, because we're very excited about it. And gentlemen, I am in your hands. Ask away.
Let's start out at ground zero. Who is Anthony D.P. Mann?
Well, depends on the day. That's the thing. That's right. I've been working in performance and broadcast, which includes radio, film, and TV for more years than I'm willing to admit at this point. Absolutely freelance. I've kind of been going about this thing my own way for the better part of 20 years. I've always had a fascination with the classics, Victorian characters, mysteries, fantasy, horror. And if we look at my resume, with the work I've done on radio, work I've done on stage, there's been a lot of adaptations of material like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde or Phantom of the Opera, which is a great role for me because I'm often told I look fantastic behind a mask. And Sherlock Holmes. I played Sherlock Holmes on radio in Montreal for some time, and we did a Sherlock Holmes film that was authorized by Conan Doyle's estate last year. Mm-hmm. And that actually opened the door to me meeting this fantastic American fellow by the name of Bill Bossert. Bill listens to a podcast that I myself do called the Horror Etc. Podcast. I'm a co-host of that. Having familiarized himself with my hammy nature on that program, and also with some of the more mainstream work that I've done, Bill wrote to me and said, you know, listen, you've always wanted to do a Dracula film, because that's something that I've talked about on the program for years and years and years. Well, how much would it cost you? I got back to him with a figure, and lo and behold, he said, hey, let's do it. That sounds great. Now, over the course of the year's production, I actually quadrupled that figure, but there's no hard feelings. In fact, Bill's a great friend, and he supports this enthusiast of all things dark and all things schlocky. Here we are talking about Terror of Dracula. It's been an exciting process, and certainly the culmination of everything that I've worked towards as far as my own career is concerned.
Well, tell us a little bit about the movie then.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I'm so excited about Terror of Dracula because, again, I've done a lot of things over the years, but I can't say that I've necessarily done anything that I can sit and watch and experience, not as the filmmaker or the author of the piece, but as a film lover, as an audience member. That has been the case up until Terror of Dracula, because finally, we've done something that has satisfied everything that I wanted to see in a Dracula film. When I was a kid, I remember catching a late-night television broadcast of the Jess Franco 1970 film, Count Dracula. Now, this film starred Christopher Lee, and it's a bit of a guilty pleasure because it really isn't a terribly well-made film, and yet it's just dripping with gothic atmosphere. In fact, Franco set out to do a really faithful adaptation, the most faithful adaptation of the Bram Stoker novel, which they did, until they ran out of budget about a quarter of the way through.
Oh,
yeah. But as such, that film stuck with me, and I immediately had a love for Dracula. And this particular film that we have brought to DVD and to select screens is one of the most faithful adaptations of the story in the past 20 years. We set out to try and get away from, again, no offense meant towards the creators of Twilight or True Blood or some of the previous more romantic takes of the vampire. They all have their own place.
Oh, sling away. We don't care.
Wait a minute. Your Dracula doesn't sparkle, huh?
We don't sparkle. In fact, there's a great quote in Fangoria magazine, and it's, you know, the one time I get quoted in print in big, bright letters in Fangoria, of all places, the print they quoted me says, I don't do sexy, but I can do scary. But that's true. It's true. We've taken the romance angle out, the sexy pathos out of the character. We've gone back to Stoker's original conception of Dracula as this ancient creature that is intelligent, but, you know, over the years has become essentially a creature that, like the rest of us, like the human race, like any species, a creature that exists to survive. We've brought the horror back to Dracula, the terror back to Dracula, and although we were limited in certain areas because of budget, I've tried to include as much as faithful an interpretation of that Stoker novel as I possibly could. So maybe it's more appropriate to say, if it's not entirely faithful in text, it is certainly faithful to the spirit of Stoker's original. And as such, again, we've crafted the Dracula film that will satisfy folks like me. I'm a fanboy, a Dracula fanboy, and I really hope that that passion that we brought into this project transcribes and other people feel the same way.
Is horror a genre of your choice? Is that your first love?
Oh, absolutely. Listen, if we look at some of our, again, the first primal instinct is to survive. That other primal instinct, which has been inherent in our very, very core, is fear. We all love to be afraid. Even if we think we don't like to be afraid, we do, because there's a chemical reaction and all that stuff. Listen, I love Sherlock. I love Hokum. I love the classics. I grew up watching the Hammer films, the Hemicus films, the Universal films. Horror today, of course, I love horror. I go see every horror film that I possibly can. I've got a collection of close to 600 horror DVDs sitting on a shelf because I do love the genre. But I do find that today's horror has become very cold, has become very cruel, very sadistic. And if we look back to the 50s and 60s and 70s, like the American international films of Vincent Price, or again, the old Universals, yes, we were being scared, but all these gentlemen and dames of horror were doing so with a twinkle in their eye. It was always safe when you left the theater. And I miss that. I truly do. Every so often a fun film comes along and it's great just to immerse oneself into it. But what we attempted to do with Dracula was to create something that felt like it was shot in the 1970s. In fact, there's a title card at the very beginning of the film that says, this is the Forgotten Dracula, produced at during the same era when Franco was producing his and the Hammer films were on vogue. This kind of got lost in the shuffle. We've actually aged the look of the film to make it look as though it were shot in the 70s, the performances, mm-hmm. the music. I'd like to think that we hit many of those points. So, in summation, that line that I find as a horror fan, I find myself saying more often than not, well, they make movies like that anymore. Well, hey, we just did.
Yeah.
Well, that explains it. Craig and I were just watching the trailer right before the interview started, and he said, this looks like something off the BBC in the 70s or something. I'm like, he's got it. He nailed
yeah.
it.
Yeah, man. Well, you know what? Actually, BBC, yes. Again, you hit the nail right on the head, because I grew up with the old BBC serials, the Granada Sherlock Holmes serials. When I was editing Terror of Dracula, I actually did when you go and you edit, what I do is my process is I chop the film into parts, either halves or thirds. And I polish each section of the film, as opposed to just going from beginning to end. It could be a monumental task. I cut Dracula up into four parts, And just for fun, I decided to add an opening and closing title sequence to each segment, you know, part one, part two, part three, with a stinger to be continued.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And it works so well. It actually looks and feels like a 70s BBC serial. So,
yeah, I half expect like Richard Lurie to come out somewhere.
Yeah, well, absolutely, absolutely. And the cool thing is, it's actually going to be broadcast in that 4-part serial version on television here in the Kingston and Ontario area in October. One episode per week leading up to Halloween. So that's kind of
excellent.
Cool.
Yeah, very cool.
All right, so I know you said you went back to the roots and back to Bram Stoker's, you know, original material. So what would you say that makes this special? Because of the way you filmed it, like we just talked about, or maybe you just took a little bit different approach to the character? What?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. You know, if you show somebody a picture and you tell them to paint that picture, you put a paintbrush in their hand and a set of colors in front of them, they're going to sketch out, they're going to create something on a canvas that is an interpretation of the image they're being shown, right? But everybody's going to transcribe that differently. If I tell a story to you, you'll tell a story to somebody else. The same story can change, can take on different colors, different flavors. And so certainly, again, referencing the source material and reinterpreting that, it is different. It's going to be different than Bela Lugosi. It's going to be different than Christopher Lee. Mm-hmm. That was something that was both conscientious, because I wanted to make sure that we did something. I remember showing my mother a rough cut of this, and she said, where do you come out of the castle and say, good evening? And I said, my God.
Right. That's what I was expecting.
With your cape around his chest, well, good evening.
Absolutely. You know, and obviously that's not going to happen. I wanted to present something that people hadn't seen before, and that was actually easy to do by just going back to the book and just painting my own interpretation of that story. Dracula does have a very different look than people expect. What really excites me the most is some of the test audiences I've shown this to. They've said, wow, these are people who have, you know, they're familiar with the Frank Langella film or the Lugosi film or the Coppola film. And they say, wow, I didn't realize that's what Dracula was about. And I'm like, yeah, absolutely. That's the book. That's the book right there. So, that's exciting. Ours is different because it is so true, again, in spirit to the source material.
I said Richard Lorre. I meant Peter Lorre. So our only listener is cringing.
I knew who you meant. Yeah.
We'll fix that in post.
By the time we see this, you know, the premiere will have already gone out, but you had a premiere on April 15th at Shockstock. Tell us, how did that go?
You know, Shockstock is this, it's a fledgling convention here. They're in the second year in London, Ontario. That's about a 5-hour drive from where I am. And an opening came up to screen the film there and sit at a table. And, you know, with my own podcast, I've covered the convention circuit before. As a media person, I've attended these as a fanboy. But here I am now sitting at a table, moving DVDs and meeting people, doing some photographs, signing a few discs. I mean, we didn't do huge business, but because it's a smaller community, so they're bringing only a limited number of people through. But it was so cool being on that other side of the spectrum and being able to share with people like myself. Mm-hmm. Just like you, gents. You know, we love genre. We love, we love that industry that would have been considered cult. It's becoming so much more mainstream now because we're able to connect with each other through the internet as we're doing right
mm-hmm.
here. It was great. It was great to screen the film, and those people that saw the film enjoyed it immensely. And I'm actually looking forward. Tomorrow night, we're going to be doing a screening for the cast and crew. It's a private screening at the cinema here in Kingston, where we're doing a week-long run of this. And a lot of these people are going to be watching the film for the first time. And to me, there's such a wonderful satisfaction. It's one thing to, you know, to paint that picture, to make this project, but then to share it with people and see their reactions and watch them jump or watch them laugh, hopefully jumping and laughing in the right, you know, the right areas. And then watching people's eyes light up as they're proud of what they've been involved with. And this is something certainly that these folks should be proud of, because it was a collaborative effort. And I just can't wait to get out there and share it with people. So Shockstock was great. We're doing a whole week here in Kingston, Ontario. And then we're going to be doing a couple screenings at the historic 80-year-old Mayfair Theatre in Ottawa, which is Canada's capital. The huge 400-seater theatre, it's going to be the ideal location. And I'm going to be over in Whitby, England in June, which is where a lot of Dracula takes place. Dracula's big business in Whitby. I'm shooting a documentary while I'm over there, and I'm also doing a private or a smaller screening of the film for a bit of a wine and cheese type fiasco. So we want to keep that growing, because it's one thing to get a DVD out. We do have a disc out, but to get out and screen it for an audience in a theater, because I'm a stage man, that to me is really exciting.
Now, take us behind the scenes. What can you tell us about the production, the filming, the locations, challenges you had? You know, give us the nitty-gritty.
The nitty-gritty. I'll tell you one thing. I learned one lesson, and I've shared this with everybody I've ever, who's ever asked a question about, you know, the process itself. I say the most fulfilling thing in the world you could possibly do is make a movie. And I also followed up by saying, never make a movie. Because it's a nightmare.
It's kind of like really, children.
Exactly. Yes. Have children. Don't have children. It's a terrifying process, especially when you're a bit of a... I hate to use the term an auteur or artist or anything along those lines, because I'm really not pretentious. I'm a big old ham. But truly, I do need to be involved with every part of that process. I wrote a draft of the script, which Bill Bossert stepped in and revised and improved on. I did the majority of the shooting on the film. A gentleman by the name of Steve Heron was our director of photography when I was on screen. I was involved with the editing process. I do the music on the film, because I have a background in music and performance. So you take it through step by step by step by step by step. This was a labor of love. This film was my baby. So every element of it taxes on you, because you know what? If people love this thing, hopefully my passion, my enthusiasm's transcribed. You know, it's been passed on. Now, if they hate this thing, and they look back and they're pointing the finger at one person, and that's me. So challenges, how do you tell this story? I mean, I felt that I had one chance. You know, this is my one chance. That when Bill Bossert, who's a wonderful, wonderful human being, who wanted to help support someone that he believed in, that he'd never met in the flesh, he stepped in and he presented this opportunity to me. I realized I had one shot. I had one chance to get this right. So the script was crafted meticulously to ensure that every scene that was written, we could pull off without having to use poor CGI or without having to skimp or make it look cheap. Thankfully, here in town, we've got, just on the outskirts of Kingston, we have historic Fort Henry, which is close to 200 years old. It's an old military fortress. It's actually a UNESCO World Heritage Site. There was a huge challenge trying to convince the powers that be at Fort Henry. Like, you know, you've got this fantastic historical museum, et cetera, et cetera. I'd like to bring a coffin in and fill it with soil and do this Dracula film. But you know what? Once we were able to relate to them that, the team we were working with, we knew what we were doing. This is, you know, we've done this type of work before. We're respectable. This is a respectable adaptation of a classic story. And we can pay. That was part of the process too. Once we were able to relate that to them, to their credit, they were great to work with, and they really helped make this work, getting us access to these subterranean passageways and these large antechambers under the building where we did all of our castle scenes. It was wonderful, wonderful. Trying to get people to believe that we could do something that was legitimate, that other people would want to see, and not say, "Oh, well, it's good for it's good for an amateur film." No, we want people to watch it and say, "Wow, that was a good production of Dracula." That was the biggest challenge for me. Again, producing something that that I would, as an audience member, as a fanboy, would want to sit down and watch. And I mean it from the bottom of my heart. I'm so proud of this film. I'm so proud of everyone that played a part in it, behind the scenes, in front of the screens, and I really can't wait for your listeners, you at home, whoever, yes, you. I'm talking to you. Really can't wait for you to enjoy Dracula at your own pace.
Master, where are we going?
We're going to Dragon Con.
Dragon Con? What's Dragoncon, Master?
It's a faraway place called Atlanta, where people of all sorts get together and have fun.
Is it hotter than Mordor?
Pretty close.
Will we find presses there?
Well, sort of. There's a thing called the Parsec Awards.
Parsec? What's a Parsec, Master?
It's an award given out to special podcasters.
Podcasters? They're bonzers! Make them stop, Master!
So you do know about them.
The Parsec Awards, a celebration of speculative fiction podcasting. Nominations are open April 15th to June 1st, 2012. Just go to ParsecAwards.com, and we hope to see you at the Parsec Ceremony at DragonCon.
Master, next time, can we just fly the Eagles to Atlanta?
Sure, Smeagol. But remember, we can only afford coach.
Well, I wanted to ask you something. You mentioned in the, in the email that we got, that we're talking about the guerrilla style shooting. Can you tell us a little bit about your decision to do that?
Yeah, well, I guess guerrilla style is a good term. In that we kind of I try not to use a lot of tripod shots. There was something about this that needed to move. It needed to breathe. And so there is a lot of freehand camera without betraying the era. But you know what we certainly did? We would go into a location with the most minimum of equipment, of essentials. You know, we brought in the basics. We relied on performance. We relied on costume. We relied on getting as much as we could to tape, as opposed to, you know, having the luxury of spending four times the amount of time that we actually were able to afford or to do everything in post. We went in. We shot on real locations with as accurate as possible costuming and sets, and really well rehearsed actors, and as such, we were able to get something that doesn't feel like it's been rehearsed or finessed beyond all reason. We also shot surreptitiously at a couple of locations. There's an old unused psychiatric hospital here in Kingston. I mean, where the hell would you find something like that? But here it is sitting on the out.
Very cool.
Yeah. Very cool.
Well, that sounds awesome.
I never go there at night. It's a really creepy spot. Now, there is security there. I remember one Sunday morning, I showed up with a group of actors. I wanted to film in a very, very small section of the property with the camera, jumped out of the car, started filming, and a security car shows up, and he says, you can't be here. And I said, well, that's kind of strange because we are here. But, you know, I said, listen, you know, this is not a commercial production by any stretch. We're just doing this thing here. We're going to be fast. Well, I might have to call the police. I thought, wait a second, this isn't good. Listen, I'm a nice guy. I don't get in trouble. But all of a sudden, here I am making this movie. And I'm threatening, you know, I'm being threatened with the police coming. So with great bravado, I said to the security guard, I said, well, it's going to take me about 3 minutes to shoot this little segment. How long do you think it's going to get for the police to get here?
Yeah. And 1 minute to jump in the car, so that's 4 minutes. What?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The response was just hurry up. So, you know, that's the approach that we took. Again, I'd like to think that I try and be as honest and individual as possible. To my chagrin, sometimes I've got an enthusiasm that I like to share with people, and I think that went a long way this time around because the stars really aligned and everything came together. And we did what I would describe as a miracle project.
Any surprises or challenges along the way that made you question whether you'll get done or not?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I get the check from Bill Bossard. We've got a script in hand. We're fully cast. And then it's the first day of production, and I don't know where to begin. I've never shot anything this long before.
Oh, no.
You know, the last film I did, Sherlock Holmes and the Shadow Watchers, ran 65 minutes, which in itself was a formidable task. Dracula ended up running 100 minutes at the very end of the day, which is great. That's a respectable length, and every scene is relevant. But when you get up there on set and you're using new equipment, and I had Bill Bostwick came to town for the first block of shooting. So I had the producer there. I've got this cast sitting around me. I've got this camera in hand because I was doing a shooting on this particular day. And the only thing I had in my head was, what the hell have you done, you idiot?
I say that every year when I film the third graders for Sunday school.
Well, there you go. There you go. It's intimidating. You know, what on earth have you done? But you stay with it because you're in, you know, you're in too far, and maybe pride kicks in, and then you're left with this jumble, this absolute mess of all this footage. And I overshot. I totally overshot. Yep. And again, it's like,
yep.
What do I do? I have no idea what to do. We started shooting August 15th of 2011, and the film was completed by the last week of February this year. We turned it around in 6 months. I can't believe it. I don't remember anything that transpired over that six-month period, but we pulled it off probably because we went into it absolutely blind. Absolutely blind. Again, I've got a background in production, a background in performance, but I don't know if I was prepared to do something like this, but maybe I have been prepared for it my whole life because it was my dream project, and jumped in barefoot, both feet, you know, full speed ahead. And lo and behold, I think we were powered by sheer audacity.
Well, you mentioned earlier that horror was one of your favorite genres. What are some of your favorite films or characters?
My favorite film of all time is a 1981 film called The Changeling. It's the greatest haunted house movie ever made, stars George C. Scott. And to me, it's the example of a perfect horror film. It's gripping, it's engaging. You never really see the horror, but yet it gets under your skin. The threat is always there in the room with you. I love that movie. The soundtrack is phenomenal. The direction, the performances are exquisite, and the atmosphere is just brooding. It's fantastic. Sherlock Holmes, again, that's a character. You asked about characters. I've always loved Holmes. He's been mm-hmm. with me for quite some time, and I'd like to think I'll get back to Holmes at some point. Phantom of the Opera, that's the other project that's next to Dracula would be the dream baby, and I'm already making forays towards maybe doing an adaptation of the Gaston LaRue novel as either the next project or one in the very near future. So All those classic baddies, they're films that I enjoy. I love the old Vincent Price films, the old Hammer films. I mean, The Abominable Dr. Fibes is a masterpiece because it's pure horror, but it's laugh-out-loud horror. I think one of the greatest and most underplayed, undersung horror films of all time is a film made by Hammer in 1968 called The Devil Rides Out. And it's a fantastic, glorious essay on Satanism with Christopher Lee in one of his rare outings as a good guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is where we need to look. I do think that the Hollywood film industry, or the Hollywood horror industry, has to a large degree lost its way. Michael Bay, what are you doing?
blow up everything.
Look back, yes, exactly. Blow up everything. You know, but look back towards, you know, towards where we came from. William Castle, Roger Corman, and Terrence Fisher. I mean, these are names that we need to hearken to. Now that being said, I have to be fair. There are some great quiet films that come out. I thought Insidious was an absolute hoot. James Wan, Insidious from last year. If you haven't seen The Innkeepers yet, this is another film that's just hit on Blu-ray, and it is a phenomenal film from the fellow who did House of the Devil a couple of years back. We're seeing perhaps a return to intelligent horror, and that's a good thing. That's a good thing because I think the industry has become far too cruel.
See, I always get the feeling that they want to be shock and, you know, like Saw or something like that, and you kind of. There's, I don't know, maybe Saw, there's a little anticipation, you know, and you're kind of building up, but I don't know.
I think about it, some of the better ones really didn't show the horror. I mean, think about the first Alien movie.
Yeah.
Or, you know, it's not always in your face, here's the ugly monster.
You're playing with your mind.
Exactly.
Well, it's like lowbrow humor. although lowbrow humor, I'll admit, does have its place. You know,
lowbrow humor here.
Lowbrow humor is one. You know, a film like Zack and Miri Make a Porno is a masterpiece, as far as I'm concerned. I love it. Although it's a very intelligent example of lowbrow humor, but you know, I look at shock horror as being that. You know, it's akin to the jump scare. It's just easy to do. It's a mechanism. It's easy to shock, but to really make somebody afraid. That fear is a fear that has to continue when they leave the theater. How do you get under their skin? Look at the original Haunting, Robert Wise's The Haunting, and compare it with the compare it with the remake from the 90s. In the 90s remake, was that a Van Zandt film? Gus Van Zandt? I forget.
I don't remember.
Either way, if you look at that film, it's you see the horror, you see the manifestations. That's not scary. I mean, Catherine Zeta-Jones looks fantastic, but everything else is terrifying. Go back to the Robert Wise film, and you never see the horror. You hear it. There's suggestion. There's odd designs in wallpaper. There is a potentially pulsating door. But it's all left to your mind. Our imaginations are capable of so much. Audiences are capable of so much intelligence and use of that imagination. I don't understand why the studio system, why that machine feels the need to dumb everything down.
It's a fine line, though. If you go too quiet, you end up with something boring like Paranormal Activity.
Well, you do run that risk, don't you? And listen, again, everything has its place. I love Nightmare on Elm Street. I love some of the unfortunate sequels to Nightmare on Elm Street. I'm starting to really enjoy the works of Dario Argento, which are very, very visceral. But there has to be a balance achieved, right?
Amityville, another good one.
Yeah, great example. Well, okay, now we're talking about the 79 film, though, right? Not the remake.
No. Yeah,
and that's a perfect example right there. That 79 film is a favorite of mine. The book still makes me soil myself just a little bit. But that remake was an absolute fiasco.
How about Men in Black? Remember? I'm just kidding. That was, scared me.
Hey, Men in Black is fun. Don't knock Men in Black.
We are Men in Black.
Right on.
That's our costume when we go to Dragon Con.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's awesome.
Well, I got to ask you another question. What scares you?
What scares me? Oh boy, it's that whole corruption of innocence thing, right? When I watch horror films, dead kids really scare me. I got to be honest. You see a dead kid in the film, that's it. I'm done.
The Ring.
Oh, The Ring. Yeah. Oh God, The Ring. I remember the first time I saw that film was in theaters, and I was living alone in the country. During this particular period of time, and I was terrified. I was absolutely terrified because I have an active imagination. I believe in ghosts and, all these terrible things. I would torture myself. I'd watch a horror movie and then I'd go to bed and not sleep. I'd be up thinking about it. I'll never forget exactly 7 days from the time that I saw the film. My friend who I went to go see it with, and he knew that I was absolutely perturbed by this thing. He calls me to the hour, 9:30 at night when the film started. Okay. Now the phone, but it gets worse. So the phone rings. I pick it up. I'm like, hello. And all I hear is 7 days. And I jumped. Now when I jumped, I knocked over my remote control for the television. Now living in the country, I didn't have cable. All I had was the Fuzzy Channel. So imagine, if you will, the phone rings. I pick it up. I hear 7 days. I jump up. The TV comes on. It's static. I died a little bit, gentlemen. But,
that's priceless.
But you know what that is? That's a perfect essay as to the power of the horror film. And that's why I love horror. That's why people get on roller coasters, right? So I'm terrified of the concept of ghosts and spiders. Spiders terrify me, although I do own a tarantula.
Talk about facing your fears.
And Barry Manilow. I'm dreadfully frightened of Barry Manilow.
Barry Manilow? You should get him in one of your movies.
There was a YouTube video. I forgot who put it together. They just had this little girl in a nightgown standing out in the hallway of a hotel, and people would walk by, and they freaked out. I mean, she wasn't wet and dripping and scary like in the movie, but they'd be walking by and just like, huh! Because there's not supposed to be a little girl standing in the middle of an empty hallway.
Exactly. That stuff is just messed up. So, you know, that's great. And when you produce a film like The Ring, I mean, The Ring was a wonderful film. Ringu was great. I thought the North American adaptation was an actual improvement on it. Ju-on, The Grudge, again, that they were great. They got under my skin. And then, of course, that whole marketing machine kicks in, and then we saw countless ripoffs and spinoffs and unfortunate sequels. And again, that's when it starts to betray the material. So, what scares me? It takes a lot. It probably doesn't take as much for me as it does with some other folks, because I go into it with beliefs and that suspension of disbelief. But ghosts, I love that type of thing. Monsters, sure, why not?
I thought you were going to say like bad remakes scare you.
I thought you were going to say the movie studios for making them do the bad remakes.
I love Pierre Schlock. There are some remakes that I enjoy. There are some films I enjoy that nobody else in the world would ever consider, fun film. But it's all about personal taste, right? So when I take a jab at, say, Hostel or the Saw films, to somebody else, that's their Franco's Conde Dracula, right? So I mean, it's all about personal preference. I do feel there's a cheapening in the industry, but hey, there's an audience for that too. Mm-hmm. And let them have cake.
Hey, I'm with you, because there was a point, that first Hulk movie, I actually kind of enjoyed it. It didn't bother me like some people.
Craig, you like Hackers.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But when you flog a dead horse, it becomes a painful exercise.
That's right.
Anthony, it has been a pleasure. Go ahead and plug the sites and the dates. You mentioned
podcast,
Kingston, Ontario, and Ottawa. Yeah. Yep, podcast. Well, go ahead, pimp
absolutely.
Yourself.
Absolutely. Listen, it has been a pleasure to be here too. And Terror of Dracula. This is the original Gothic horror returning as you remember Dracula, but something different about it too. We've gone back to the original novel. Check it out. There's a trailer online. www.newdraculamovie.com. There are screening dates listed there as this thing continues to unfold. We're going to keep on adding screening dates. We're going to keep on adding new content to the website, like a downloadable series of e-comics, which flush out secondary characters in the story. But the DVD is available. It's available through the website. $20 will ship it anywhere in the world, inclusive of that fee. It's also available on Amazon.com. So check it out. And once you've seen the film, we'd love to hear from you as well. I think it's important to maintain ties and to interact with your audience. So we're looking for all the feedback on this too. Just be nice.
Hey, Craig, I think we should Misty this at DragonCon.
Absolutely.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
We've got it recorded. We got permission now.
Nice. Good stuff. Well, listen, Craig and Chuck, it's been a pleasure to be here on Technorama. Thank you to you gents and to your listeners as well for listening to my spiel and for suffering through some of my bad jokes.
Our pleasure.
Cheers, gentlemen. Have a great evening.
Once again, thank you, Anthony, for joining us, and thank you for listening. We appreciate you giving us your support. If you like the show, there are many ways to show your love. You can call the listener line at 206-222-CHAT. That's 206-222-2428. We're going to keep telling you till you remember it and have it memorized. Or email us, technorama@chuckchat.com. You can also send us a thing on Twitter, C. Tomasi Step K, Technorama. All the Twittery things and goodness and stuff is over at the website at chuckchat.com. You'll find it there. If you haven't done so recently, we'd really appreciate a review on the iTunes Music Store. Doesn't cost you anything, and it's real easy to do. If you want to see how this show is made, the regular show, not these special things, they're kind of ad hoc, but the regular show is usually on Sunday night at 9:30 Eastern Time. Just join us on Google+, circle Technorama Podcast, and you'll see when we're having our little hangout thingy, and you can join us there. We'd love to see you. This show is a proud member of Friends in Tech. You can find out more at friendsintech.com. We're also affiliated with all the great podcasts over at farpointmedia.com. Check them out. There's something over there you like. Until next time, tell a friend about Technorama, and as always, a binary high five.
101. Blah, blah. Sounded like the Count of Sesame Street.
Or Zoidberg.